With the speed bubble collapsed, normal time was restored. To the three visitors, only seconds had passed, and to their ears, Waxillium and Wayne's conversation would be sped up to the point that most of it would be inaudible. The coughing would cover anything else. None of the three visitors seemed to have noticed anything unusual. Waxillium poured the tea. It was a deep cherry color today, likely a sweet fruit tea, and brought a cup over to Marcy. She took it, and he sat down, holding his own cup in one hand, taking out and gripping the cartridge with the other. Both the casing and the medium-caliber bullet's jacket looked like steel, but the entire thing seemed too light. He frowned, hefting it. Blood on her face, blood on the brick wall. He shivered, fighting off those memories.
Damn you, Wayne.
The tea is delicious. Thank you.
You're welcome. Lady Steris, I will consider this contract. Thank you for producing it. But really, I was hoping this meeting might allow me to learn more about you.
I have been working on an autobiography. Perhaps I will send you a chapter or two of it by post.
That's very unconventional of you. Though it would be appreciated. But please, tell me of yourself. What are your interests?
Normally, I like plays. At the Coolerum, actually.
Am I missing something?
The Coolerum Playhouse. 2 nights ago, it was robbed in the middle of the performance.
Haven't you heard? It was in all the broadsheets.
Was anyone harmed?
Not at the event itself, but they did take a hostage as they escaped.
Such a horrid thing. Nobody has heard from Armal yet.
You knew her?
Cousin.
Same as...
Waxillium nodded toward Marcy. The three regarded him with confused expressions for a moment.
No. Different side of the family.
Interesting.
Waxillium leaned back in his chair, tea sitting ignored in his hand.
And ambitious. Robbing an entire playhouse. How many of the robbers were there?
Dozens. Maybe as many as 30, so the reports say.
Quite a band. That means as many as another 8 just to drive them away. And vehicles for escaping. Impressive.
It's the Vanishers. The ones stealing from the railway also.
That hasn't been proven.
No, but one of the witnesses from a railway robbery described several men who were at the theater robbery.
Wait, there were witnesses to one of the railway robberies? I thought they happened in secret. Something about a ghostly rail car appearing on the tracks?
Yes. The railway engineers stopped to investigate and probably panic. But the phantom rail car vanishes before they can investigate it. They continue on, but when they reach the end of the line, one of their train's cars is empty. Still locked. No signs of forced entry, but the goods are all gone.
So nobody sees the culprits?
The recent ones have been different. They've started robbing passenger cars as well. When the train stops because of the phantom on the tracks, men jump into the cars and start going through, collecting jewelry and pocketbooks from the occupants. They take a woman hostage, threatening to kill her if anyone follows, and go. The freight car is still robbed as well.
Curious?
Yes, I think...
My dear, you are bothering Lord Ladrian.
Marcy blushed, then looked down.
It wasn't a bother.
Is that a bullet in your fingers?
Waxillium looked down, realizing that he was rolling the cartridge between forefinger and thumb. He closed his fist around it before his memories could return.
It's nothing.
He shot a glare at Wayne. The other man mouthed something. Push on it.
You are quite certain your unconventional past is behind you, Lord Ladrian?
Oh, he's certain. You don't have to worry about him being unconventional. Why, he is downright boring. Unbelievably, comically, nonsensically boring. You could squeeze more excitement out of a beggar waiting in line at the soup kitchen on rat meat day.
Thank you, Uncle. Yes, Steris, my past is just that. Past. I am committed to my duties as head of House Ladrian.
Very well. We will need a formal entrance into high society as a couple. A public event of some sort.
How about the Yeoman Ostlin wedding dinner? I received an invitation just this morning.
An excellent idea. We are invited as well.
Push on it.
Waxillium reached into his left sleeve and covertly took a small pinch of steel shavings from the pouch he kept there. He dropped it into his tea and took a drink. That didn't give him much of a reserve, but it was enough. He burned steel, the familiar lines of blue springing up around him. They pointed to all nearby sources of metal, except the one in his fingers.
Aluminum. No wonder it's light.
Aluminum and a few of its alloys were elementically inert. You couldn't push or pull on them. It was also very expensive. It cost more than even gold or platinum. The bullet was designed to kill coin shots and lurchers, men like Waxillium himself. That gave him a shiver, though he gripped the round more tightly. There were days when he'd have given his best gun for a few aluminum bullets, though he hadn't heard of an alloy that would produce a bullet with sound ballistics. "Where?" he mouthed to Wayne. "Where did you find it?" Wayne just nodded to the guests, who were looking right at Waxillium.
"Are you quite all right, Lord Ladrian? I know a good zinc counselor if you have need of some emotional aid."
No. Thank you. I am quite all right. And I think this has been a very productive meeting. Wouldn't you agree?"
"That depends."
Steris stood, apparently taking that as an invitation to end the conversation.
"The wedding party is on the morrow, I believe. I can count on you having reviewed the contract by then?"
"You can."
Waxillium stood as well.
"I think this meeting was wonderful. You're just what my nephew needs, Lady Steris. A firm hand. None of this rabble-rousing he's been used to."
"I agree. Lord Ladrian, perhaps your uncle can attend the dinner."
"No. No, unfortunately, he has to return to his estates. Told me just earlier. He has a very important foaling to attend."
"Oh, well then."
Lord Harms helped Marcy to her feet.
"We will send you word of confirmation once we have accepted the yeoman invitation."
"And I will do likewise."
Waxillium escorted them to the door of the room.
"Farewell, until then."
Teom bowed to them there, then escorted them out. Their departure felt rushed to Waxillium, but he was relieved to see them go. Considering Wayne's sudden intrusion, that had actually gone pretty well. Nobody had ended up trying to shoot him.
"Nice bunch. I now see what you're doing. With a wife and in-laws like those, you'll feel quite at home here. Just like the jailhouse and its occupants back in Wuthering."
"Very nice. Where did you get the bullet?"
"It was dropped at the theater robbery. Traded the constables for it this morning."
Waxillium closed his eyes. Wayne had a very liberal interpretation of what trading entailed.
"Oh, don't get that way. I left them a nice cobblestone for it." I think Steris and her pop are convinced you're a loon, by the way."
"That's nothing new. My association with you has been convincing people I'm insane for years now."
"Ha! And here I thought you'd lost your sense of humor."
Wayne walked back into the room. He slid his pencil out of his pocket as he passed a table, trading it for one of Waxillium's pens.
"My humor isn't lost, Wayne, just strained. What I told you is true, and this bullet doesn't change anything."
"Maybe it doesn't."
Wayne retrieved his hat, duster, and dueling canes.
"But I'm still gonna see what I can find."
"It's not your job."
"And it wasn't your job to start hunting down criminals out in the roughs. Doesn't change what needs to be done, mate."
Wayne walked up to Waxillium, then handed him the hat. Once Waxillium took it, Wayne threw on his coat.
"Wayne."
"People are being taken, Wax."
Wayne took back his hat and put it on.
"4 hostages so far. None returned. Stealing jewelry is one thing. Taking food from roughs towns is another. Kidnapping people. Well, there's something going on here. I'm going to find out what it is, with or without you."
"Without me."
"Fine. But I need something, Wax. A place to look. You always did the thinking."
"Yes, having a brain helps with that, surprisingly."
Wayne narrowed his eyes at him. Then he raised his eyebrows pleadingly.
"All right. How many robberies now?"
8. 7 railway cars and most recently the theater."
4 hostages?"
"Yeah, across 3 of the latest robberies. 2 were taken from one of the trains, then 1 from the robbery at the theater. All 4 hostages are women."
"Easier to overpower, and more likely to make the men worry about getting them killed if they try to give chase."
"Do you need to know what was stolen?"
Wayne reached into the pocket of his duster.
"I traded one of the constables for a list."
"It doesn't matter. Or at least, most of it probably doesn't. It's not about the robberies."
"It's not?"
"No. Large gang. Well-funded. Too well-funded."
Waxillium pulled out the round and looked it over.
"If they really wanted money, they'd be robbing gold transports or banks. The robberies are probably a distraction. If you want a man's horses, sometimes the best thing to do is let his hogs loose. While he's chasing them down, you ride off. I'd lay money on these vanishers being after something else, something unlikely. Perhaps an item that is easy to overlook in all that has been taken. Or maybe it's really about extortion, and they plan to start asking for protection money from people in town. See if anyone's been contacted about that. I haven't, by the way. If that goes nowhere, look at the hostages. One of them might have been carrying something that was the real target of the robbery. I wouldn't be surprised if this turned out to be about clandestine blackmail.
But they robbed a few trains before taking any hostages.
Yes, and they got away with it. There was no reason to expose themselves by robbing passengers if they could make off with cargo unseen and unstopped. They're after something else, Wayne. Trust me.
All right.
The wiry man rubbed his face, then finally pulled off the fake mustache. He stuffed it into his pocket.
But tell me, don't you even want to know? Doesn't it itch at you?
No.
I'd believe you if you could say that without your eye twitching, mate.
Wayne nodded toward the bullet.
I noticed you didn't offer to give that back.
I didn't.
Waxillium pocketed it.
And you still wear your metal mines. Not to mention that you're still keeping steel inside your sleeve. I noticed a gun catalogue over on the table, too.
A man must have his hobbies.
If you say so.
Wayne stepped forward and tapped Waxillium on the chest.
But you know what I think? I think you're looking for excuses to not let go. This thing, it's who you are. And no mansion, no marriage, and no mere title is going to change that. You're meant to be helping people, mate. It's what you do.
8 hours later, Waxillium stood at an upper window of his mansion. He watched the last broken fragments of a dying day. They dimmed, then grew black. He waited, hoping, but no mist came.
What does it matter? You're not going to go outside anyway.
Still, he wished the mists were out. He felt more at peace when they were out there, watching. The world became a different place, one he felt he better understood. He crossed his study to the wall and turned on the electric lights. They were still a wonder to him. Even though he knew the words of Founding had given hints regarding electricity, what men had achieved still seemed incredible. He crossed the room to his uncle's desk. His desk. Back in Weathering, Waxillium had used a rough, flimsy table. Now he had a sturdy, smoothly polished desk of stained oak. He sat down and began leafing through ledgers of house finances. It wasn't long, however, before his eyes started flicking toward the stack of broadsheets lying on his easy chair. He'd asked Limmy to go gather a few of them for him. He usually ignored the broadsheets these days. Reports of crimes had a way of setting his mind running in circles and keeping him from focusing on his business. Of course, now that thoughts of the Vanishers had been planted in his mind, he'd have trouble letting go and doing anything productive, at least until he had scratched a few itches about what they'd been doing.
Perhaps just a little reading, to catch up on current events.
It wouldn't hurt to be informed. In fact, it might be important to his ability to entertain discussions with others. Waxillium fetched the stack and returned to his desk. He easily found an account of the robberies in the day's paper. Other broadsheets in the stack had even more information. He'd mentioned the Vanishers to Limmy, and so she'd gathered a few broadsheets that were intended for people who wanted a collection of all the recent stories on them. These were reprinted articles from weeks or even months ago, with the original dates of the story's publication. Those types of broadsheets were popular, he could tell, as he had three different ones from three different publishers. It seemed everyone wanted to stay up to date on items they'd missed. By the dates listed on the reprinted articles, the first robbery had happened much earlier than he'd assumed. 7 months ago, just before he'd arrived back in Ellendale. There had been a lapse of 4 months between the first railway cargo disappearance and the second. The name Vanishers hadn't started being used until this second attack. The robberies were all similar, save for the one at the playhouse. A train was stopped because of a distraction on the tracks. Early on, a fallen tree. Later, a ghostly phantom rail car that appeared from the mists, traveling directly at the train. The engineers stopped in a panic, but the phantom ahead vanished. The engineers would start their train again. When it reached its destination, one of their cars was found to have been emptied of all goods. People were ascribing all kinds of mystical powers to the robbers, who seemed to be able to pass through walls and locked cargo cars without trouble.
But what goods were stolen?
The reports of the first theft didn't say, though it did mention the cargo had belonged to Augustin Tekiel. Tekiel was one of the richest houses in the city, based over in the second octant, though it was building its new skyscraper in the financial district of the fourth octant. Waxillium read the articles over again, then searched through the broadsheets, scanning them for any further mention of the first robbery before the second occurred.
What's this?
He held up a broadsheet that included a reprint of a letter Augustin Tekiel had written for publication a few months back. The letter denounced Ellendale constables for failure to protect or recover Tekiel's goods. The broadsheet had happily printed it, even made a headline of it. Constables incompetent, Tekiel slams. 3 months. It had taken 3 months for Tekiel to say anything. Waxillium put aside these compilation broadsheets, then searched through the more recent broadsheets for other mentions. There was no shortage of them. The robberies were dramatic and mysterious, two things that sold a lot of papers. The second and third robberies had been of steel shipments. Odd, that. An impractically heavy substance to take, and not as valuable as simply robbing the passenger cars. The fourth robbery had been the one that caught Wayne's attention. Packaged foodstuffs from a train on its way to the Northern Roughs. The fifth robbery had been the first to involve the passengers. The sixth and seventh had done so as well, the seventh being the only time the Vanishers had taken two hostages instead of one. All three of the later robberies had involved stealing from a freight car as well as from the passengers. Metals in two cases, foodstuffs in another case. At least that was all the newspaper reported. With each case, the details had grown more interesting, as the cargo cars had been better secured. More sophisticated locks, guards riding along. The robberies happened incredibly quickly, considering the weight of goods taken.
Did they use a speed bubble, like Wayne makes?
But no. You couldn't move in or out of a speed bubble once one was up, and it would be impossible to make one large enough to facilitate this kind of robbery. So far as he knew, at least. Waxillium continued reading. There were a great many articles with theories, quotes, and eyewitness reports. Many suggested a speed bubble, but editorials cut those to shreds. Too much manpower would be needed, more than could fit in a speed bubble. They thought it more likely that a ferrochemist who could increase his strength was lifting the heavy materials out of the cars and carrying them off. But to where? And why? And how were they bypassing the locks and the guards? Waxillium cut out articles he found interesting. Few had any solid information. He looked up to see Tiom in the doorway, holding a tray of tea and a basket, the handle over his arm.
Tea, my lord.
That would be wonderful.
Tiom strode forward and set up a small stand beside the desk, getting a cup and a sharp white napkin.
Do you have a preference?
Whatever.
My lord, there is great importance to tea. It should never merely be whatever. Tell me, are you planning to sleep soon?
Definitely not.
Very well. Would you prefer something to help clear your mind?
That might be nice.
Sweet or not?
Not.
Minty or spicy?
Minty.
Strong or weak?
Strong.
Excellent.
Tiom took several jars and some silver spoons from his basket. He began mixing powders and bits of herbs into a cup.
My lord looks very intent.
My lord is annoyed. Broadsheets make for terrible research opportunities. I need to know what was in the first shipment.
The first shipment, my lord?
The first rail car that the thieves stole from.
Miss Grimes would note that you seem to be slipping into old habits, my lord.
Miss Grimes isn't here, fortunately. Besides, Lord Harms and his daughter seem aghast that I didn't know about the robberies. I must keep abreast of events in the city.
That's a very excellent excuse, my lord.
Thank you.
Waxillium took the cup of tea.
I almost have myself completely persuaded. Oh, preservation's wings, man. This is good.
Thank you, my lord.
Tiom took out the napkin and folded it down the middle and laid it across the arm of Waxillium's chair.
And I believe that the first thing stolen was a shipment of wool. I heard it being discussed at the butcher's earlier in the week.
Wool? That makes no sense.
None of these crimes make much sense, my lord.
Yes. Unfortunately, those are the most interesting kind of crimes. I need paper.
What?
A large sheet, as big as you can find.
I will see what is available, my lord.
How long had it been since Waxillium had started his research? He glanced at the clock and was surprised at the time. Well into the night already. Well, he was into it now. He'd never sleep until he'd worked it through. He rose and began to pace, holding his teacup and saucer before him. He stayed away from the windows. He was backlit and would make an excellent target for a sniper outside. Not that he really thought there would be one, but, well, he felt more comfortable working this way.
Whoa.
He walked over and opened the ledger, looking up some figures. He grew so absorbed that he didn't notice the passing of time until Tiom returned.
Will this do, my lord?
He set down an artist's easel with a large pad of paper clipped to it.
The old Lord Ladrian kept this for your sister. She did love to draw.
Vaxilium looked at it and felt his heart clench. He hadn't thought of Telson in ages. They had been so distant most of their lives. Not by intent, like his distance from his uncle. Vaxilium and the previous Lord Ladrian had often been at odds. No, this distance from Telson had been one born more of laziness. 20 years apart, only seeing his sister occasionally, had let him slide along without much contact. And then she'd died, in the same accident as his uncle. He wished the news had been harder for him to hear. It should have been harder for him to hear. She'd been a stranger by then, though.
My lord?
The paper is perfect.
Vaxilium fetched a pencil.
Thank you. I was worried we'd have to hang the paper on the wall.
Hang it?
Yes, I used to use bits of tar.
That idea seemed to make Tiom very uncomfortable. Vaxilium ignored him, walking over and beginning to write on the pad.
Oh, this is nice paper.
I'm pleased, my lord.
Vaxilium drew a little train in the top left corner, putting in a track ahead of it. He wrote a date beneath it.
First robbery, 14th of Vinuark. Target, wool, supposedly.
In like manner, he added more trains, tracks, dates, and details down the paper. Wayne had always mocked him when he'd sketched out crimes to help him think. But it worked, though he frequently had to put up with Wayne's playful additions of little stick-figure bandits or mist wraiths rampaging across the otherwise neat and orderly sketchwork and notes.
Second robbery happened much later. Medals. For the first robbery, Lord Tekiel didn't make any kind of fuss until months had passed.
He tapped the paper, then crossed out the word wool.
He didn't lose a shipment of wool. It was early summer then, and wool prices would be too low to justify the freight charges. As I recall, the rates were unusually high in Vinuark because the 18th railway line was out of service. It would take a man with breadcrumbs for brains to pay a premium to ship out-of-season wares to people who didn't want them.
So...
Just a moment.
Vaxilium walked over and pulled a few ledgers off the shelf beside his desk. His uncle had some shipping manifests here. Yes. The old Lord Ladrian had kept very good track of what his competitor houses had been shipping. Vaxilium scanned the lists for oddities. It took him a little while, but he eventually came up with a theory.
Aluminum. Tekiel was probably shipping aluminum, but avoiding taxes by claiming it as something else. In here, his stated aluminum shipments for the last 2 years are much smaller than they were for previous years. His smelters are still producing, however. I'd bet my best gun that Augustine Tekiel, with the help of some railway workers, has been running a nice, profitable little smuggling operation. That's why he didn't make a big commotion about the theft at first. He didn't want to draw attention.
Vaxilium walked over and wrote some notations on his paper. He lifted his cup of tea to his lips, nodding to himself.
That also explains the long wait between the first and second robberies. The bandits were making use of that aluminum. They probably sold some of it on the black market to fund their operation, then used the rest to make aluminum bullets. But why would they need aluminum bullets?
For killing allomancers?
Yes.
Vaxilium drew in images of faces above three of the robberies, the ones where they'd taken hostages.
My lord, you think the captives are allomancers?
The names have all been released. All four are women from wealthy families, but none of them openly have allomantic powers.
Tiom remained quiet. That didn't mean everything. Many allomancers among the upper crust were discreet about their powers. There were plenty of situations where that could be useful. For instance, if you were a rioter or soother capable of influencing people's emotions, you wouldn't want people to suspect. In other cases, allomancy was flaunted. A recent candidate for the orchard grower's seat on the Senate had run solely on the platform that he was a copper cloud and was therefore impossible to affect with zinc or brass. The candidate won by a landslide. People hated thinking that someone might secretly be pulling their leader's strings. Vaxilium started noting his speculations around the margins of the paper. Motives, possible ways they were emptying the freight cars so quickly, similarities and differences among the heists. As he wrote, he hesitated, then added a couple of stick figure bandits at the top, drawn in Wayne's sloppy style. Crazy though it was, he felt better having them there.
How about the captives were all allomancers secretly? The thieves had aluminum bullets to deal with coin shots, lurchers, and thugs. And if we were able to catch any of the thieves, I'll bet good money that we'd find them wearing aluminum linings in their hats to shield their emotions from being pushed or pulled on.
That wasn't uncommon among the city's elite as well, though the common men couldn't afford such luxury. The robberies weren't about money. They were about the captives. That was why no bounty had been demanded, and why the bodies of the captives hadn't been discovered dumped somewhere. The robberies were meant to obscure the true motives for the kidnappings. The victims were not the spur-of-the-moment hostages they were meant to appear. The vanishers were gathering allomancers and allomantic metals. So far, raw steel, pewter, iron, zinc, brass, tin, and even some bend alloy had been stolen.
This is dangerous. Very dangerous.
My lord, weren't you going to go over the house account ledgers?
Yes.
And the lease for the new offices in Ironspine?
I can still get to that tonight, too.
My lord, when?
Waxillium checked his pocket watch. Again, he was surprised to see how much time had passed.
My lord, did I ever tell you about your uncle's horse racing days?
Uncle Edwin was a gambler?
Indeed he was. It was a great problem to the house. Soon after his rise to High Lord, he would spend most of his days at the tracks.
No wonder we're destitute.
Actually, he was quite good at gambling, my lord. He usually came out ahead. Far ahead.
Oh.
He stopped, anyway.
Thiome collected his tray and Waxillium's empty teacup.
Unfortunately, my lord, while he was away winning a small fortune at the races, the house lost a large fortune in mismanaged business and financial dealings.
He walked toward the door, but turned.
It is not my place to lecture, my lord. Once one becomes a man, he can and must make his own decisions. But I do offer a warning. Even a good thing can become destructive if taken to excess. Your house needs you. Thousands of families rely upon you. They need your leadership and your guidance. You did not ask for this, I understand. But the mark of a great man is one who knows when to set aside the important things in order to accomplish the vital ones.
Waxillium stood alone beneath the uncannily steady glow of the electric lights, looking at his diagram. He tossed the pencil aside, suddenly feeling drained, and fished out his pocket watch. It was 2:15. He should be getting some sleep. Normal people slept at these hours. He dimmed the lights to not be backlit, then walked to the window. He was still depressed not to see any mists, even though he hadn't expected them.
I never said daily prayers. Things have been too chaotic today.
Well, it was better to arrive late than not at all. He reached into his pocket, fishing out his earring. It was a simple thing, stamped on the head with the 10 interlocking rings of the path. He slipped it into his ear, which was pierced for the purpose, and leaned against the window to stare out at the darkened city. There was no specific prescribed posture for praying as a Pathian, just 15 minutes of meditation and pondering. Some liked to sit with legs crossed, eyes closed, but Waxillium had always found it harder to think in that posture. It made his back hurt and his spine tingle. What if someone sneaked around behind him and shot him in the back? So he just stood and pondered.
How are things up there in the mists?
He was never sure how to talk to Harmony.
Life's good, I assume? What with you being a god and all?
In response, he felt a sense of amusement. He could never tell if he created those sensations himself or not.
Well, since I'm not a god myself, perhaps you could use that omniscience of yours to drum up some answers for me. It feels like I'm in a bind.
A discordant thought. This wasn't like most of the binds he'd been in. He wasn't tied up, about to be murdered. He wasn't lost in the roughs, without water or food, trying to find his way back to civilization. He was standing in a lavish mansion, and while his family was having financial troubles, it was nothing they couldn't weather. He had a life of luxury and a seat on the city senate. Why, then, did he feel like these last 6 months had been among the hardest he'd ever lived? An endless series of reports, ledgers, dinner parties, and business deals. The butler was right. Many did rely on him. The Ladrian House had started as several thousand individuals following the Origin, and had grown large in 300 years, adopting under its protection any who came to work on its properties or in its foundries. The deals Waxillium negotiated determined their wages, their privileges, their lifestyle. If his house collapsed, they'd find employment elsewhere, but would be considered lesser members of those houses for a generation or two until they obtained full rights.
I've done hard things before. I can do this one. If it's right. Is it right?
Steris had called the path a simple religion. Perhaps it was. There was only one basic tenet: do more good than harm. There were other aspects. The belief that all truth was important. The requirement to give more than one took. There were over 300 examples listed in the words of founding. Religions that could have been. Might have been. In other times, in another world. The path was to study them, learn from their moral codes. A few rules were central. Do not seek lust without commitment. See the strengths in all flaws. Pray and meditate 15 minutes a day. And don't waste time worshiping harmony. Doing good was the worship. Waxillium had been converted to the path soon after leaving Ellendale. He was still convinced that the woman he'd met on that train ride must have been one of the faceless immortals, the heads of harmony. She'd given him his earring. Every Pathian wore one while praying. The problem was, it was hard for Waxillium to feel like he was doing anything useful. Luncheons and ledgers, contracts and negotiations. He knew, logically, that all of it was important. But those, even his vote on the Senate, were all abstractions. No match for seeing a murderer jailed or a kidnapped child rescued. In his youth, he'd lived in the city, the world's center of culture, science, and progress, for 2 decades. But he hadn't found himself until he'd left it and wandered the dusty, infertile lands out beyond the mountains.
Use your talents. You'll figure it out.
That made him smile ruefully. He couldn't help wondering why, if Harmony really was listening, he didn't give more specific answers. Often, all Waxillium got from prayer was a sense of encouragement. Keep going. It's not as difficult as you feel it is. Don't give up. He closed his eyes and lost himself in thought. Other religions had their ceremonies and their meetings, not the Pathians. In a way, its very simplicity made the path much harder to follow. It left interpretation up to one's own conscience. After meditating for a time, he couldn't help feeling that Harmony wanted him to study the Vanishers and to be a good house lord. Were the two mutually exclusive? Teom thought they were. Waxillium glanced back at the stack of broadsheets and the easel with the drawing pad on it. He reached into his pocket, taking out the bullet Wayne had left. And against his will, he saw in his mind's eye Lessie, head jerking back, blood spraying into the air, blood covering her beautiful brown hair. Blood on the floor, on the walls, on the murderer who had been standing behind her. But that murderer hadn't been the one to shoot her.
Oh, Harmony.
He raised a hand to his head and slowly sat down, back to the wall.
It really is about her, isn't it? I can't do that again. Not again.
He dropped the round, pulled off his earring. He stood, walked over, cleaned up the broadsheets, and closed the drawing board. Nobody had been hurt by the Vanishers yet. They were robbing people, but they weren't harming them. There wasn't even proof that the hostages were in danger. Likely they'd be returned after ransom demands were met. Waxillium sat down to work on his house's ledgers instead. He let them draw his attention well into the night.
Harmony's forearms.
Waxillium stepped into the grand ballroom.
This is what passes for a modest wedding dinner these days? There are more people in here than live in entire towns in the Roughs.
Waxillium had visited the Yeoman Mansion once in his youth, but that time the grand ballroom had been empty. Now it was filled. Rows and rows of tables lined the hardwood floor of the cavernous chamber. There had to be over 100 of them. Ladies, lords, elected officials, and the wealthy elite moved and chatted, all dressed in their finest. Sparkling jewels, crisp black suits with colorful cravats. Women with dresses after the modern fashion, deep colors, skirts that went down to the floor, thick outer layers with lots of folds and lace. Most women wore tight, vest-like coats over the top, and the necklines were much lower now than he remembered them being in his childhood. Perhaps he was simply more likely to notice.
What was that, Waxillium?
Steris turned to the side and let him help off her overcoat. She wore a fine red dress that seemed calculatedly designed to be completely in fashion, but not too daring.
I was simply noting the size of this gathering, my dear.
Waxillium folded her coat and handed it, along with his bowler hat, to a waiting attendant.
I've been to quite a number of functions since my return to the city, and none were this enormous. Practically half the city seems to have been invited.
Well, this is something special. A wedding involving two very well-connected houses. They wouldn't want to leave anyone out. Except, of course, the ones they left out on purpose.
Steris held out her arm for him to take. He'd received a detailed lecture during the carriage ride on how precisely he was to hold it. His arm above hers, taking her hand lightly, fingers wrapping down under her palm. It looked horribly unnatural, but she insisted that it would convey the exact meaning they intended. Indeed, as they stepped down onto the ballroom floor, they drew a number of interested looks.
You imply that one purpose of this wedding dinner is not who is invited, but who is not.
Precisely. And in order to fulfill that purpose, everybody else must be invited. The yeomans are powerful, even if they do believe in Sliverism. Horrid religion. Imagine revering Iron Eyes himself. Anyway, nobody will ignore an invitation to this celebration, and so those to be slighted will not only find themselves without a party to attend, but unable to arrange their own diversions, as anyone they might have wanted to invite will be here. That leaves them to either associate with other uninviteds, therefore reinforcing their outcast status, or to sit alone at home, thinking about how they have been insulted.
In my experience, that sort of unhappy brooding leads to a high probability of people getting shot.
She smiled, waving with calculated fondness to someone they passed.
This isn't the roughs, Waxillium. It is the city. We don't do such things here.
No, you don't. Shooting people would be too charitable for city folks.
You haven't even seen the worst of it. You see that person turned away from us? The stocky man with the longer hair?
Yes?
Lord Sherriman, an infamously dreadful party guest. He's a complete bore when not drunk, and a complete buffoon when he is drunk, which is most of the time, I might add. He is probably the least likable person in all of upper society. Most people here would rather spend an hour amputating one of their own toes than spend a few moments chatting with him.
So why is he here?
For the insult factor, Waxillium. Those who were snubbed will be even more aghast to learn that Sherriman was here. By including a few bad alloys like him, men and women who are utterly undesirable but who don't realize it, House Yeoman is essentially saying, we'd even prefer spending time with these people to spending it with you. Very effective. Very nasty.
If you tried something that rude out in Weathering, it would end with you strung up by your heels from the rafters, if you're lucky.
Yes.
A servant stepped forward, gesturing for them to follow as she led them to a table.
You understand that I am no longer responding to your ignorant frontiersman act, Waxillium.
Act?
Yes, you are a man. The prospect of marriage makes men uncomfortable, and they clutch for freedom. Therefore, you have begun regressing, tossing out savage comments to provoke a reaction from me. This is your instinct for masculine independence, an exaggeration meant unconsciously to undermine the wedding.
You assume it's an exaggeration, Steris. Maybe this is what I am.
You are what you choose to be, Waxillium. As for these people here and choices made by House Yeoman, I did not make these rules. Nor do I approve of them. Many are inconvenient. But it is the society in which we live. Therefore, I make of myself something that can survive in this environment.
Waxillium frowned as she released his arm and fondly kissed cheeks with a few women from a nearby table. Distant relatives, it seemed. He found himself clasping hands behind his back and nodding with a civil smile to those who came to greet Steris and him. He'd made a good showing for himself these last months while moving among upper society, and people treated him far more amiably than they once had. He was even fond of some of those who approached. However, the nature of what he was doing with Steris still made him uncomfortable, and he found it difficult to enjoy much of the conversation. In addition, this many people in one place still made his back itch. Too much confusion, too difficult to watch the exits. He preferred the smaller parties, or at least the ones spread across a large number of rooms. When the bride and groom arrived, everyone got to their feet. Lord Joshin and Lady Michelle. Waxillium didn't know them, though he did wonder why they were speaking with a scruffy man who looked like a beggar dressed all in black. Fortunately, it didn't seem Steris intended to drag him over to wait with those intent upon congratulating the newlyweds at the earliest possible moment. Soon the first tables were served their meals. Steris sent for a servant to prepare their table. Waxillium passed the time by inspecting the room. There were two balconies, one at each shorter end of the rectangular ballroom. There appeared to be space for dining up there, though no tables had been set up. They were being used for musicians today. Majestic chandeliers hung from the ceiling, six enormous ones down the center, outfitted with thousands of sparkling pieces of crystal. 12 smaller ones hung at their sides.
Electric lights. Those chandeliers must have been a horrible pain to light before the conversion.
The sheer cost of a party like this numbed his senses. He could have fed Weathering for a year on what was being spent for this single evening. His uncle had sold the Ladrian Ballroom a few years back. It had been a separate building in a different neighborhood from the mansion. That made Waxillium happy. From what he remembered, it had been as large as this one. If they'd still owned it, people might have expected him to throw lavish parties like this.
Well?
Steris held out her arm for him again as the servant returned to lead them to their table. He could see Lord Harms and Steris's cousin Marisi sitting at the table already.
I'm remembering why I left the city.
Life is so damn hard here.
Many would say that of the roughs.
A few of them have lived in both. Living here is a different kind of hard, but it's still hard. Marisi is joining us again?
Indeed.
What is going on with her, Steris?
She's from the Outer Estates and badly wanted the chance to attend university here in the city. My father took pity on her, as her own parents haven't the means to support her. He is allowing her to reside with us for the duration of her studies.
A valid explanation, though it seemed to roll out of Steris's mouth far too quickly. Was it a practiced excuse, or was Waxillium assuming too much? Either way, further discussion was interrupted as Lord Harms rose to greet his daughter. Waxillium shook hands with Lord Harms, took Marisi's hand and bowed, then sat. Steris began speaking with her father about the people she'd noted to be attending or absent, and Waxillium rested his elbows on the table.
Hard room to defend. Snipers on those balconies would work, but you'd need some on each one, watching to make sure nobody gets beneath the other.
Anyone with a strong enough gun, or the right alimentic powers, could take out snipers from below. The pillars below the balconies would also be good shelter, though. The more cover there was, the better the situation for the man who was outnumbered. Not that you ever wanted to be outnumbered, but he'd rarely been in any fight where he wasn't. So he looked for cover. In the open, a gunfight came down to who could field the most men with weapons. But once you could hide, skill and experience started to compensate. Maybe this room wouldn't be too bad a place for a fight after all. He hesitated. What was he doing? He'd made his decision. Did he have to keep remaking it every few days?
Marcy, your cousin tells me you've entered into university studies.
I'm in my final year.
And how go your studies?
Well?
Marcy looked down, holding her napkin.
That was productive.
Fortunately, it looked like a server was approaching. The lean man began pouring wine for them.
The soup will be along presently.
The voice froze Waxillium stiff.
Today's soup is a delightfully seasoned prawn bisque with a hint of pepper. You shall find it quite enjoyable, I think.
The server glanced at Waxillium, eyes twinkling in amusement. Though he wore a false nose and a wig, those were Wayne's eyes.
My lord doesn't like prawns?
The bisque is quite good. I've had it at a yeoman party before.
It's not the soup. I've just recalled something I forgot to do.
It involves strangling someone.
I shall return shortly with your soup, my lords and ladies.
Marisi turned and watched him go.
Does that server look familiar?
He must have served us last time we were here.
But I wasn't with you last time.
Lord Harms, has anything been heard of your relative? The one who was kidnapped by the Vanishers?
No, ruin those thieves. This kind of thing is absolutely unacceptable. They should confine such behavior to the roughs.
Yes, it does somewhat undermine one's respect for the constabulary when things like this occur. And the robbery inside the city, how terrible.
What was it like, Lord Ladrian, living where there was no law?
It was difficult sometimes. Out there, some people just believe they can take what they want. It would actually surprise them when someone stood up to them, as if I were some spoiler, the only one who didn't understand the game they were all playing.
Game?
A figure of speech, Lord Harms. You see, they all seemed to think that if you were skilled or well-armed, you could take whatever you want. I was both, and yet instead of taking, I stopped them. They found it baffling.
It was very brave of you.
It wasn't bravery, honestly. I just kind of fell into things.
Even stopping the shore fires?
They were a special case. How did you know about that?
Reports trickle in from the roughs. Most of them get written up by someone. You can find them at the university or at the right bookshop.
Oh.
Uncomfortable, he picked up his cup and drank some wine. As he did, something slipped into his mouth. He nearly spat out the entire mouthful in surprise. He contained himself, barely.
Wayne, I really am gonna throttle you.
He moved the object into his hand as he covered his mouth.
Well, hopefully the constables will soon deal with these ruffians and we can return to peace and law.
Actually, I don't think that's likely.
Child, that's quite enough.
I'd like to hear what she has to say, my lord, for the sake of conversation.
Well, all right, I suppose.
It's a simple theory I had, Lord Ladrian. When you were a lawkeeper in Wuthering, what was the population of the city?
He fingered the item in his hand, a spent bullet casing that had been capped with a dab of wax.
Well, it started to grow rapidly in the last few years. But for most of that time, I'd say it was around 1,500.
And the surrounding area? All the places you'd patrol but didn't have their own lawkeepers?
Maybe 3,000 total, depending. There are a lot of transients out in the roughs. People looking for a mineral claim or to start up a farmstead. Workers moving from place to place.
Let's say 3,000. And how many of you were there, those who helped keep the law?
5 or 6, depending. Wayne and I, and Barrow most of the time. A few others on and off.
And Lessie.
Let's say 6 per 3,000. Give us an easy number to work with. 1 lawman per 500 people.
What is the point of this?
The population of our octant is around 600,000. By the same ratio Lord Ladrian described, we should have roughly 1,200 constables. But we don't. It's somewhere closer to 600, last I looked over the numbers. So, Lord Ladrian, your savage wildlands actually had double the number of lawmen watching over it as we have here in the city.
Huh.
I'm not trying to diminish your accomplishments. You more likely had a higher percentage of lawbreakers as well, since the reputation of the roughs draws that type. But I think it's a matter of perception. As you said, out of the city, people expect to get away with their crimes. Here, they are more circumspect. And many of the crimes are smaller in scope. Instead of the bank getting robbed, you get a dozen people being robbed on their way home at night. The nature of the urban environment makes it easier to hide if you keep your crimes below a certain level of visibility. But I wouldn't say life is really safer in the city, despite what people think. I'll bet more people are murdered here by percentage of the population than out in the roughs. There is so much more going on in the city, however, that people pay less attention to it. By contrast, when a man is murdered in a small town, it's a very disruptive event, even if it's the only murder that's happened in years. And all of this isn't even counting the fact that much of the wealth in the world is concentrated in a few places inside the city. Wealth draws men looking for opportunity. There are a whole host of reasons why the city is more dangerous than the roughs. It's just that we pretend that it isn't.
Waxillium folded his arms in front of him on the table. Curious, once she started talking, she didn't seem shy at all.
You see, my lord, this is why I tried to still her.
It would have been a shame if you had, as I believe that's the most interesting thing anyone has said to me since I returned to Ellendale.
Marcy smiled, though Steris just rolled her eyes. Wayne returned with the soup. Unfortunately, the area around them was crowded. Wayne wouldn't be able to create a speed bubble around just Waxillium and himself. They would catch someone else, and anyone caught in it would have time sped up for them as well. Wayne couldn't shape the bubble or choose whom it affected. While the others were distracted by the soup, Waxillium broke the wax off the sealed shell casing and found a small rolled-up piece of paper inside. He glanced at Wayne, then unrolled it.
You were right.
Wayne leaned in and placed a bowl in front of him.
I usually am. What are you up to, Wayne?
170, thank you. I've been lifting weights and eating steak.
Quaxilium gave him a flat stare.
I will return with a bread basket and more wine. Please, enjoy the soup.
Lord Ladrian, I suggest that we begin compiling a list of conversational topics we can employ when in the company of others. The topics should not touch on politics or religion, yet should be memorable and give us opportunities to appear charming. Do you know any particularly witty sayings or stories that can be our starting point?
I once shot the tail off a dog by mistake. It's kind of a funny story.
Shooting dogs is hardly appropriate dinner conversation.
I know. Particularly since I was aiming for its balls.
Lord Ladrian!
I thought you said I couldn't shock you any longer. I was merely testing your hypothesis, my dear.
Honestly, you will eventually overcome this rural lack of decorum, won't you?
I suspect that I will indeed eventually overcome it. The amusing thing is that when I was in the roughs, I was considered to be highly refined. So much so, in fact, that they thought me haughty.
Calling a man refined by rough standards is like saying a brick is soft by building material standards, right before you smash it into a man's face.
Father!
It was a perfectly legitimate simile.
We will have no further talk of hitting people with bricks or of shootings, regardless of the target.
Very well, cousin. Lord Ladrian, I once heard that you threw a man's own knife at him and hit him right through the eye. Is that story true?
It was actually Wayne's knife. And the eye was an accident. I was aiming for the balls that time, too.
Lord Ladrian!
I know. That's quite off target. I've got really bad aim with throwing knives.
Steris looked at them, growing red. Marisi met her gaze with innocent equanimity.
No bricks and no guns. I was making conversation as you requested.
I'm going to see myself to the women's washroom while you three compose yourselves.
Steris stalked away, and Waxillium felt a stab of guilt. She was stiff, but she seemed earnest and honest. She did not deserve mockery. It was very hard not to try provoking her, however.
That was uncalled for, child. You must not make me regret my promise to stop bringing you to these functions.
Don't blame her, my lord. I was the primary offender. I'll offer a suitable apology to Steris when she returns and will guard my tongue for the rest of the evening. I shouldn't have allowed myself to go so far.
I'll admit, I've been tempted to such lengths myself a time or two. She's much as her mother was.
I see.
This is our lot, son. To be lord of a house requires certain sacrifices. Now, if you'll excuse me, I see Lord Alanath over at the bar, and I think I'll grab a nip of something harder with him before the main course. If I don't go before Steris gets back, she'll bully me into staying. I shouldn't be long.
He nodded to the two of them, then waddled toward a group of higher-built tables off to the side, next to an open bar. Waxillium watched him go, idly thinking and rolling Wayne's note in his fingers. Previously, he'd assumed Lord Harms had driven Steris to be as she was, but it appeared he was more under her thumb than vice versa.
Thank you for your defense of me, Lord Ladrian. It appears that you are as quick to come to a lady's aid with words as you are with pistols.
I was merely stating the truth as I saw it, my lady.
Tell me, did you really shoot off a dog's tail when you were aiming for his...
Yes. In my defense, the damn thing was attacking me. Belonged to a man I hunted down. The aggressiveness wasn't the dog's fault. The poor thing looked like it hadn't been fed in days. I was trying to shoot it somewhere non-lethal, scare it off. That part about the man I hit in the eye was fabricated, though. I wasn't actually aiming for any body part in particular. I was just hoping I'd hit.
Might I ask you something?
Please.
You looked crestfallen when I spoke of the statistics dealing with the lawmen ratios. I didn't mean to offend or downplay your heroics.
It's all right.
But?
I'm not sure if I can explain it. When I found my way out to the roughs, when I started bringing in the warranted, I started to... Well, I thought I'd found a place where I was needed. I thought I'd found a way to do something that nobody else would do.
But you did.
And yet, it appears that all along, the place I left behind might have needed me even more. I'd never noticed.
You did important work, Lord Ladrian. Vital work. Besides, I understand that before you arrived, nobody was upholding the law in that area.
There was Arbitan. And of course, the lawkeepers over in Far Dorist.
A distant city and with a short reach, which had a single capable lawman to serve a large population. John Deadfinger had his own problems. By the time you had built things up, Weathering was protected better than those in the city. But it did not start that way.
He nodded, though, again, he was curious about how much she knew. Were people really telling stories about him and Wayne all the way over here in the city? Why hadn't he heard of them before now? Her statistics did bother him. He hadn't thought of the city as dangerous. It was the roughs, wild and untamed, that needed rescuing. The city was the land of plenty that Harmony had created to shelter mankind. Here, trees grew fruit in abundance, and cultivated lands had water without need for irrigation. The ground was always fertile, and somehow never got farmed out. This land was supposed to be different, protected. He put away his guns in part because he'd convinced himself that the constables could do their jobs without help.
But don't the Vanishers prove that might not be the case?
Wayne returned with the bread and a bottle of wine, then stopped, looking at the two empty seats.
Oh, dear. Did you grow so tired of waiting that you devoured your two companions?
Marisie glanced at him and smiled.
She knows. She recognizes him.
If I may note something, my lady, you are far less unassuming than you were at our first meeting.
I'm not very good at being shy, am I?
I wasn't aware it was something that required practice.
I try all the time.
Wayne sat down at the table, and taking a baguette out of his basket, he took a healthy bite.
Nobody gives me any credit for it. It's because I misunderstood, I tell you.
Should I pretend to be aghast at what he's doing?
He saw that you'd recognized him. Now he's going to sulk.
Sulk? That's right unkind, Works. Ugh. This stuff is worse than I was telling you guys. Sorry about that.
It will reflect in my tip. Lady Marisie, I was serious in my inquiry. To be frank, it seems that you've been trying to act with exaggerated timidity.
Always looking down after you speak. Raising the pitch of your tone a little too much with questions.
Not the type to be studying at the university at her own request. Why the act?
I'd rather not say.
You'd rather not? Or Lord Harms and his daughter would rather you not?
The latter. But please, I would really prefer to leave the topic.
Ever charming, Wax. See that? You've pushed the lady almost to tears.
I'm not...
Ignore him. Trust me, he's like a rash. The more you scratch him, the more irritating he gets.
Ouch!
Aren't you worried? You're wearing a waiter's uniform. If they see you sitting at the table and eating...
Oh, that's a good point.
Wayne tipped his chair back. The person behind him had left, and with Lord Harms gone, Wayne had just enough room to... And there it was. He leaned his chair forward again, clothing changed back to a duster with a loose button-down shirt and thick ruffs trousers underneath. He spun his hat on his finger. The earrings were gone.
Speed bubble. I thought I'd be able to see something from the outside.
You could if you were watching closely. A blur. If you look at the next table over, the sleeve of his waiter's coat is sticking out from where he tossed it. His hat folds. Though the sides are stiff, you can compress it between your hands. I'm still trying to figure out where he had the duster.
Under your table.
Ah, of course. He had to know beforehand which table would be ours so he could be assigned as our waiter.
I really should have looked under the table before we sat. Would that have seemed too paranoid?
He didn't feel paranoid. He didn't lie awake at nights worried that he'd be shot or think that conspiracies were trying to destroy him. He just liked to be careful. Marisie was still looking at Wayne. She seemed bemused.
We aren't what you expected. From the reports you read?
No. The accounts usually omitted matters of personality.
There are stories about us.
Yes, many.
Damn. Do we get royalties for them or something? If we do, I want Wax's share, seeing as to how I did all the stuff they say he did. Plus, he's already rich and all.
They are news-style reports. Those don't pay royalties to their subjects.
Filthy cheats. I wonder if any of the other fine ladies in this establishment have heard of my outrageously heroic and masculine exploits.
Lady Marisie is a student at the university. I'm assuming she read the reports that are collected there. Most of the public won't be familiar with them.
That is true.
Oh. Well, maybe Lady Marisie herself might be interested in hearing more of my outrageously...
Wayne?
Yes.
Enough.
Right.
I do apologize for him, Marisie.
He does that a lot. Apologize, and I think it's one of his personal failings. I try to help him out by being damn near perfect, but so far that hasn't been enough.
It's quite all right. I do wonder if I should write something for my professors describing how unique it was to meet you two.
What is it exactly that you are studying at the university?
She hesitated, then blushed deeply.
Ah, see? Now that's how to act shy. You're getting much better. Bravo.
It's just that...
She raised a hand to shade her eyes and looked down in embarrassment.
It's just... All right. I'm studying legal justice and criminal behavioristics.
That's something to be ashamed of?
Well, I've been told it's not very feminine. But beyond that, well, I'm sitting with you two and... Well, you know, you're two of the most famous lawkeepers in the world and all, and...
Trust me, we don't know as much as you might think.
Now, if you were studying buffoonery and idiotic behavior, that is something we're experts on.
That's two things.
Don't care. So where are the other two? I'm assuming you didn't really devour them. Wax only eats people on the weekend.
Both will likely be returning soon, Wayne. So if you had a purpose to your visit, you may wish to be on with it. Unless this is just normal, run-of-the-mill tormenting.
I told you what it was about. You didn't accidentally eat my note, did you?
No, it didn't say much.
It said enough.
Wayne leaned in.
Wax, you told me to look at the hostages. You were right.
They're all allomancers?
More than that. They're all relatives.
It's only been 300 years since the originators, Wayne. We're all relatives.
Does that mean you'll take responsibility for me?
No.
Wayne pulled a folded piece of paper from his duster pocket.
It's more than that, Wax. Look, each of the women kidnapped was from a particular line. I did some researching. Real serious stuff.
Waxillium took the paper and studied it. It was written awkwardly, but was decipherable. It explained the basic lines of descent of each of the women kidnapped. Several things stood out. Each of them could trace back to the Lord Mistborn himself. Because of that, most of them also had a strong heritage of allomancy in their past. They were all fairly closely related, third or fourth cousins, some first. Waxillium looked up and noticed Maracy smiling broadly, regarding him and Wayne.
What?
I knew it! I knew you were in town to investigate the Vanishers! You showed up to become House Lord only 1 month after the first robbery happened. You're going to catch them, aren't you?
Is that why you insisted that Lord Harms bring you to meetings with me?
Maybe.
Maracy, you're jumping to conclusions. Do you think the deaths in my family, making me House Lord, were fabrications?
Well, no. But I was surprised that you'd accepted the title until I realized that you probably saw it as a chance to find out what is going on with these robberies. You have to admit, they are unusual.
So is Wayne. But I wouldn't uproot myself, change my entire lifestyle, and accept responsibility for an entire house just to study him.
Look, Wax, please tell me you brought a gun with you.
What? No, I didn't.
Waxillium folded up the paper and handed it back.
Why would you care?
Because, don't you see? The thieves are looking for places they can rob, where the wealthy upper classes of Ellendale can be found. Because among those wealthy upper class types, they find their targets. People with the right heritage. Those types, rich types, have stopped traveling on the railway.
Yes. If the women really are the true targets, the high-profile robberies will make potential future targets much less likely to travel. A valid connection. That must be why the thieves attacked the theater.
And where else are there wealthy individuals with the right heritage? A place where people wear their finest jewelry, which will let you rob them as a distraction? A place where you can find the right hostage to take as the real prize.
A large wedding reception.